Well, hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone who is joining us here for our weekly show on Brighteon TV, The Tenpenny Files on Your Health. For the last 22 years, I've given literally thousands of interviews on radio, television, podcasts, live conferences, and seminars, and almost all of my information has been in one way or another about vaccines. But as a trained emergency medicine physician and the director of a level 2 trauma center for more than 12 years, and an integrative medicine physician of a very busy practice in Cleveland, Ohio since 1996, there's so many other things to talk about and to discuss. So this show is kind of like a classroom. You might want to take some notes because we discuss a lot of things that will be valuable to your health. Tonight, I have a special guest, Dr. Kimberly Biss, an OB-GYN practicing in St. Petersburg, Florida. We will be discussing the huge drop in fertility and at the same time, the huge increase in the numbers of miscarriages, preterm labor, third trimester demise. Stay tuned. You won't want to miss this. We'll be right back.
With so much of the world's current food supply consisting of dirty, contaminated, genetically modified foods that may have been grown using herbicides and pesticides, increased scrutiny over what you put in your body is of the utmost importance. Even supposedly organic foods found on most grocery store shelves may contain toxic substances, chemicals, and other additives that can be harmful to your health. That's why here at BrighteonStore.com, we subject all our in-house products to extensive lab testing for glyphosate, heavy metals, and microbiology using our state-of-the-art spectrometry equipment to ensure the highest quality of cleanliness and purity. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. This evening, we have a very special guest. Dr. Kimberly Biss was born in Massachusetts and grew up in New Jersey. She received her medical degree from Tufts University Medical School in 1993. She went on to complete an internship in surgery at Emory University School of Medicine and then did an OB-GYN residency at Bayfront Medical Center in St. Petersburg, Florida, where she has remained in practice since 1998. During the span of her career, she's been involved with more than 8,000 pregnancies and deliveries. During late 2021, Dr. Biss began noticing that the miscarriage rates had gone up by about 50% in her practice, and the number of newly pregnant patients calling for an appointment had decreased by about 50% also. She started seeing a 15% increase in abnormal pap smears and a big increase in cervical cancer in young people. She noticed that pregnant patients were not coming as seriously ill as what they had been promoted when they contracted COVID illness. On a personal note, Dr. Biss is celebrating her 30th wedding anniversary in May. She has two adult children, and in her spare time, she enjoys weightlifting, watching Tampa Bay Lightning hockey matches, and drinking wine in a cabin in the woods. My kind of girl. I love that. So Dr. Kimberly, welcome so much to the Tenpenny Files on Your Health.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start talking about some of the observations in your clinic. I mean, what were you noticing over the last couple of years that made you sort of say, there's something going on here that's not right?
Yeah, I started to notice in November of 2021 that we were seeing a pretty significant rise in our miscarriage rate. And I have a slide presentation if it would be helpful to discuss enhance that further. So
just a second. So you really noticed it. Are you in a practice with other OB-GYNs?
I am. There's one other physician in our practice, currently one midwife. We had two, and we have a gynecology nurse practitioner.
Yeah, and I think you said that you noticed that it seemed as though the fertility rate was going down because you weren't getting as many calls, if I remember right.
Yeah, we weren't getting as many newly pregnant patients registering in our practice. The number started to go down in 2021 and then even more so in 2022.
Wow. Well, you said that we have a slide presentation set up that you put together to sort of explain these details and some of the things that you're going through right now. So we'll go ahead and put that up. You've got about 18 minutes or so to go through your slides and explain whatever you want to our audience here tonight.
Okay, first and foremost, I'd like to explain that when you're taking care of a pregnant patient, you actually have two patients, the mom and the fetus. And we've always had a category of drugs that we utilize the categories before prescribing medications. And we never prescribe a medication that's, you know, newly formulated and hasn't been studied on animals, at least. The majority, there's five categories, A, B, C, D, and X. The majority of medicines we use are A, B, and C. D medications are only used if the benefit outweighs the risks, as animal trials have shown risk to the fetus. And category X drugs we never use. You can skip to slide six, actually. So I would argue that these messenger RNA vaccines are definitely category X and should never have been given to pregnant women. We've had two other, if you go to the next slide, there's a lot of words here, but basically we've had two other drugs utilized in the past in obstetrics that didn't fare well for the patients. The first is diethylstilbestrol, which we used to prevent miscarriage and premature labor, originally used 1940 to 1971. And in the 1950s, its use declined as it was not shown to be effective. In the 1970s, it became evident that in utero exposure caused cancers in the offspring. You can skip to the thalidomide slide, two slides up. The other drug that's been a catastrophe in obstetrics is thalidomide, which was originally prescribed in 1957 for morning sickness and ultimately removed in 1961 because we were noticing some birth defects in the babies. I fear that these messenger RNAs are going to be in the same category as DES and thalidomide in the future. If you skip to slide 11, when we give an injection or a vaccine, this is injected into the deltoid muscle of the arm, and it's brought, whatever's injected into the body is brought into the lymphatic system. And that's where in the lymph nodes in the regional areas where the antibodies are supposed to be made. We were all told that these injections stayed in the arm. They clearly did not stay in the arm, because if you look at the next slide, that addresses the Pfizer data that was received by the Japanese through a FOIA request, showing that the lipid nanoparticles went throughout the entire body. And if you go to the next slide, it shows highlighted that it definitely goes to the ovaries and the testes. So what does that mean for fertility? The next slide demonstrates how the messenger RNA mechanism of action is. So when the messenger RNA is delivered to the cell, it goes into the cell, and the messenger RNA code is then turned into spike protein that also had an anchor protein. Then it's delivered to the cell membrane, and the anchor protein was supposed to keep the spike protein on that cell. However, the whole process failed for two reasons. One, the anchor protein didn't work, so the spike protein ended up flowing throughout the body. And fragments of the spike protein were shown through the MH1, MH2 reaction to activate T cells, which ultimately caused a lot of inflammation, cytokine release, and death of the cell. Next slide. This is just a closer up picture of the actual viral spike protein when attaches to the ACE2 receptor. When the spike protein is not involved with the virus and it attaches to the ACE2 receptor, it causes mitochondria dysfunction, and it also causes the clotting cascade to be activated. Next slide. This is an article that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine by Shima Bakura, and it was published in June of 2021. It was analyzing the VSafe data, which was an app that patients would have on their phone after they received the injection to record any adverse events. There were 827 pregnant patients in the cohort that this article addressed, and they stated that the miscarriage rate in pregnant women was 13%. However, this was not correctly calculated, as they used the entire cohort as the denominator. You can't use a third trimester pregnant woman in the denominator to discuss miscarriage, because a miscarriage occurs prior to 20 weeks. After 20 weeks, it's a stillbirth. So when somebody actually wrote an editorial in August of 2021 and showed the correct calculation, the miscarriage rate was actually 80%.
Oh my.
And they also state that a 13% miscarriage rate is close to the normal miscarriage rate of 10 to 15%. But I will tell you clinically, I've never seen a miscarriage rate that high. NAERT wrote a paper demonstrating the miscarriage rate's probably closer to 5 to 6%. And I would say clinically, I've probably seen about 5% through all my years of practice, almost 30 if you include my residency training. This was also demonstrated in the data that Dr. Naomi Wolf obtained through FOIA requests, showing a miscarriage rate close to the 80th, you know, in the 80s. If you go to the next slide, this is a picture of Jessica Rose's Substack. I sent her my data in 2021 November, or sorry, 2022 November. I had collected it from January of 2020 and basically sent everything up till the latter portion of November 2022. And it shows in her Substack in nice pretty graphs and tables that in 2020, my average miscarriage rate was 4%. Then I had misquoted myself in the video you were discussing in the beginning, where I said that my miscarriage rate went up 50%. I was actually incorrect, because it went up 100%.
Oh my.
In 2021, the miscarriage rate was 8%. And then in 2022, it increased to 15%. And then in December alone, the miscarriage rate in my practice was 25%. We had 13 losses out of 41 newly pregnant patients. So far this year, it's about 15% for both January and February. The other thing that this picture demonstrates, the blue bars are the newly registered pregnant patients. So you can see from year to year, they've gone down. Next slide is the same information. The slide on the 20, number 20 slide is actually the Department of Defense data, showing all the way to the right of the slide how the miscarriage rate is so much more. This was in the year 2021 when compared to previous years. Next slide addresses an article that Dr. Thorpe and others wrote regarding the menstrual disorders, which I'm not going to go into in this discussion, but definitely a lot of women, after the injections were provided, experienced a lot of bleeding abnormalities in both the reproductive and the postmenopausal age. And interestingly enough, a lot of those women had not received the vaccine. So that addresses the concept of shedding. I'm currently involved right now with Dr. Thorpe and Dr. Ryan Cole. We're going to be doing a research project where we're actually going to provide Dr. Cole with some tissue blocks, and he's going to be able to stain for spike protein and possibly lipid nanoparticles. So if the patient's stains positive for spike protein, and she does not have any nucleocapsid, which would exclude infectious reason to have the spike, and she was never injected, then obviously this would have been due to shedding. So that'll be an interesting study. Next slide. Yeah, we can go to that one. So the other issues that I've seen in pregnancy since the rollout increase is hypertensive disorders in pregnancy. So preeclampsia or gestational hypertension, which usually occurs in the third trimester of pregnancy. Those have been occurring at more increased frequency than what I had seen prior to 2021. We're also seeing an increase in oligohydramnios, which is low amniotic fluid around the baby. And both the hypertensive issues and the oligohydramnios is causing us to admit our patients earlier than their due date and induce their labor. The other thing we're seeing, which is a little concerning, is an increase in postpartum hemorrhages. The anesthesia personnel are also noticing this too, because they have to be involved in the care of these patients when this occurs. And it's very interesting because after we deliver a baby and we feel the top of the uterus, it's supposed to become very firm, which it is, but they still continue to have bleeding, which suggests it's happening in the lower portion of the uterus. And it may, we don't know why this is, but some women have required hysterectomies because we can't control their bleeding in the usual manner that we had prior to, you know, the COVID pandemic. Dr. Dan McDyer is a colleague of mine in Jacksonville, Florida, and he actually had that situation. And the tissue is currently with Dr. Cole right now to see if there's any spike protein, especially in the lower uterine segment. And I would argue it's got to be more than spike, because we weren't seeing these issues in 2020 with just the infection alone. So there's probably some component of the lipid nanoparticle that's involved as well. The other thing we're seeing, fortunately not in my area, Dr. Thorpe has certain areas he's discussed in our country, in Canada and around the world, where we've noticed an increase in stillbirths, which would be a fetal demise after 20 weeks. I ran the numbers on my obstetric unit, which delivers anywhere between 36 to 3,800 babies a year, and our stillbirth rate has been steady from year to year, so I've not noticed an uptick in that, thank God. Other issues we're seeing in the gynecologic realm, there's definitely an increased risk of breast cancer. We know that these injections may somehow interfere with our tumor suppressive genes. I have a patient, longtime patient of mine, who owns a wig store. She came in to see me for her annual a few months ago and said over the last year she couldn't believe how many women have come in for wigs that have undergone chemotherapy for breast cancer. And she's never seen that before. And she's owned this store for over 20 years. The other thing, I have not personally seen an increase in cervical cancer. I know it's a little bit increased in the area per our gynecology oncologist, but I've definitely seen an increase in my abnormal pap smear rate. In July of 2021, I decided I was going to go back to annual pap smear screening, because if you recall in 2011, after a huge Kaiser study, the interval time between paps was increased to 3 to 5 years. I was a little concerned that maybe HPV could possibly be reactivated, because as you are aware in the VAERS reports, a lot of people broke out with shingles after they got these injections, which is varicella, obviously, but still, you know, maybe there could be some reactivation of HPV. So I've been doing my PAPs on my patients every year. And I had the lab run my numbers for my company, and my pap smear, abnormal pap smear rate has actually gone up by 15%.
Wow.
And the other thing, obviously, is the infertility. The decreased number of newly registered patients in our practice would, you know, possibly be indicative of infertility. I don't think a lot of people have decided to not become pregnant because of climate change. but I have had patients that, you know, had two or three normal pregnancies and then got these injections, and then they're not able to get pregnant, and or they've had several losses in a row, and we've sent them on to infertility, and I'll get 5 and 6 and 7 page reports from these infertility doctors, and they never mention once whether this could be related to the injections. I think they're staying very quiet, honestly, because they're probably making bank on all this infertility and seeing a lot more patients, which is sad. Next slide is the Department of Defense data that shows all the way to the right the increase in breast cancer, breast malignancies. The next slide is an interesting picture. Too bad if your viewers can't see this. This was sent to me by my colleague, Dan McDyer. This is a physician who got a Moderna booster and was having some problems breathing, an athletic person, went to the emergency room and had this cast after diagnosed with saddle embolus. This cast was removed not from the venous system, but the arterial system of the lung.
Oh, wow.
And it came out completely intact. The same person also had a arterial clot all the way from the right ankle up to the right groin. So what's concerning is these clots are occurring in the arterial system, which is a high velocity flow system. You know, normally thromboembolic events occur in the venous system where there's stasis. The other thing that's happening in the arterial system is dissections. There's been carotid and aortic dissections. So very concerning. Next slide. This is a paper by Dr. Beth Pinellas, who's a maternal fetal medicine or high risk obstetrician in the Houston area. She did a study starting from April of 2020 until May of 2021, comparing women hospitalized with COVID, the pregnant and the non-pregnant women. She had over 25,000 patients she studied. And she showed with statistical significance that pregnant women and non-pregnant women, the ventilation rate was the same. However, mortality was significantly less in pregnant women. And I would argue that probably the ventilation was the same because doctors get very nervous around pregnant women and they will admit them a lot more often than a non-pregnant woman and probably decided to ventilate a pregnant woman more often than they would a non. But the significant thing from this article shows that pregnant women actually did better when you look at mortality with COVID. And I had in the year 2020, I had 274 deliveries and we did not have one pregnant woman end up in the hospital on a ventilator. And fortunately, we had no mortality over the last 3 years in any of our patients. The next slide, this is interesting. We received an email from the American Board of OBGYN. Other specialties also received similar emails from their specialty boards, which basically said, play nice, don't say anything bad about the vaccine, or you could potentially lose your board certification. Now, that's not the same as losing your license, but if you don't have board certification, you essentially can't practice at most hospitals or be on any insurance contracts because they want you to be board certified. The next slide shows ethical decision-making in obstetrics and gynecology. This is a committee opinion in our Green Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. And I would argue that our patients, there's an area in this committee opinion which addresses informed consent. And I would argue our patients never received informed consent because they weren't told of the risks nor the alternatives. And there were both with regards to COVID. The mechanisms involved with the possible injury, we just don't know because the research hasn't been done, but there's inflammation is probably the culprit behind a lot of the losses because there's nothing good that develops with inflammation, and that would be the same with hypertensive disorders. The other issue is the endocrine system and the clotting. And early on, Dr. Yeadon and Sukarat Bhakti were concerned that there may be antibodies made to the syncytial layer of the embryo because they're very similar to the spike protein. And that's the end of my
Wow. That was extremely informative. And I was taking a few notes while you were talking, because after the break, we'll come back here for, we have a break coming up, just a couple of minute break, and then we'll come back. And then we'll unpack a lot of what you said. I've got some questions specifically about your slides, and we'll come back right after this break. You won't want to miss this discussion. Be back with us here in just a couple minutes.
The boosters are killing millions. A vaccine holocaust has begun.
We are seeing right now the highest death rates we have ever seen in the history of this business.
The vaccinated have chronic COVID.
Hey folks, guess you heard this morning I tested positive for COVID. But I've been double vaccinated, double boosted.
They're drowning in bioweapons sludge. But a generation of patriots are standing back and standing by. Christopher Key is leading the revolution.
Good morning, America!
Yeah, but that's why they're poisonous with the water, the food, the supplements.
Confronting corrupt corporations through peaceful protest and righteous resistance. Visit vaccine-police.com to stay informed on pure blood survival and products that keep your loved ones safe. Vaccine-police.com.
With so much of the world's current food supply consisting of dirty, contaminated, genetically modified foods that may have been grown using herbicides and pesticides, increased scrutiny over what you put in your body is of the utmost importance. Even supposedly organic foods found on most grocery store shelves may contain toxic substances, chemicals, and other additives that can be harmful to your health. That's why here at BrighteonStore.com, we subject all our in-house products to extensive lab testing for glyphosate, heavy metals, and microbiology using our state-of-the-art spectrometry equipment to ensure the highest quality of cleanliness and purity. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
Well, welcome back, everyone, and thank you for joining me here tonight on the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. We've been speaking with Dr. Kimberly Biss, who's an OB-GYN in Fort Lauderdale, in St. Petersburg. I'm really geographically challenged when it comes to Florida. It's not my favorite state. I know everybody yells at me about it all the time, but we've had just she gave an incredible presentation on the slides. So when this gets posted tomorrow, if you missed it or you didn't see all of it, you'll definitely want to go back and re-listen to what she talked about, because it's very interesting. And while she was speaking, I took a few notes of some things that I want to go back to and explain a little bit more for our audience, because there was a lot of information there to unpack. She started out, Dr. Kimberly, you started out by talking about the different categories of drugs that can mm-hmm. and cannot be used in pregnant women. I mean, it's interesting because back in the day, I mean, I'm a board certified ER doc, and it used to be that pregnant women couldn't even take an aspirin or a Tylenol. And now we've got this category of drugs that we can but shouldn't use. What is a category X drug? Explain that a little bit further for our audience.
So a category X drug, there's definitely been some well-controlled trials that have showed risk to the fetus in either animal or human trials. So these products should never be used in pregnancy.
But these shots were never even used in animal trials.
Correct.
So is there some other worser category than X?
No.
Saying that, you know, we didn't even have animal trials to show risk in this, right? We just decided that, oh, for whatever reason. And like you also said at the beginning of your presentation, you know, you've got two patients that you're dealing with here. So no thought at all was given about the transplacental attack of the spike protein in the messenger RNA in the fetus. So are you seeing any, right after delivery, have you seen any birth defects or any real problems with breathing or bleeding in the baby as soon as it's born?
So fortunately, I have not experienced that. I did have one patient whose baby was delivered with like 8-9 Apgars, doing fine up until 20 minutes of birth. and then decompensated respiratory-wise and had to go to the NICU and ultimately was placed on ECMO.
Tell people what that is.
So that's basically bypass, where there's a machine that your blood goes through that oxygenates the blood because your lungs aren't doing it for you. And I've never, ever had a baby I've delivered that's had to go on ECMO because I don't take care of babies that would have like a diaphragmatic hernia or something that they would require that. The baby ultimately did well with really no explanation behind it. And there's, you know, genetic testing pending and everything, but I know she was vaccinated. But I haven't seen the litany of birth defects that Dr. Thorpe has seen. But again, Dr. Thorpe is a referral physician, so he's going to be sent, you know,
high risk
ultrasounds, right?
Yeah, high-risk pregnancies. Yeah, because I've read individual reports about babies that can't latch and they really don't have even enough horsepower in their lungs and in their throat to even be able to nurse, you know. And it's and the third trimester fetal demise. I mean, you made a comment that miscarriages happen before 20 weeks. And then after 20 weeks, clinically, that's considered to be a stillbirth. And I've read quite a bit about third trimester fetal demise. And I've heard Dr. Christian Northrup, who's one of the five docs, and she's a good friend of mine. And I've heard Dr. Thorpe also talking about that during their careers, because they're both in their probably late 60s, I would guess, that during their careers, that they would see one or two third trimester or late fetal demise or stillbirths, maybe one or two per year. And now they were seeing many per month. And a lot of nurses have come forward saying that they are now seeing such an increase in late, you know, third trimester, late fetal demise with no reason for it, except suddenly now, like you also said, all the genetic testing is going on instead of saying, isn't it pretty obvious that there should be a connection between, you know, the shot and what's happening here? I wrote an article, this was a while back, it was kind of a parody, and I was talking about, you know, around Thanksgiving, children come down with a condition that's called Bluefoot syndrome, and they go to the doctor, and the baby's screaming and crying with this Bluefoot. It's so painful, and the doctor says, we don't know what caused it, we don't know why you have it, we'll do genetic testing, there's nothing we can do, but we know one thing for sure, it has nothing to do with the frozen turkey you dropped on the child's foot. And it was meant to be funny and kind of a parody, and also sort of saying, you know, we have these children with autism, we have these children that have all of these problems, but it has nothing to do with the shot. In fact, we're not even going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that we won't connect to the shot, but let's go back to the other slide you were talking about with thalidomide. I mean, it didn't take very long, I don't think, before they pulled that off the market. And people that are younger that are listening to this may not know what thalidomide was and what it caused. Why don't we talk about that for just a little bit?
Yeah, so in 1957, thalidomide was put on the market, and it was given to pregnant women to help with morning sickness. It was removed 3 years later because they estimated at that time that about 10,000 babies had been born with severe limb defects. They called the babies flipper babies because basically they would have hands sticking out of their shoulders and they wouldn't have any arms, and their legs basically wouldn't have much of any legs. And 40% of those babies died at birth. So it was an awful drug. It's currently used now to treat multiple myeloma and leprosy. So it's still around.
Wow.
But definitely not to be given to pregnant women.
I didn't realize that it took 3 years and 10,000 deformities before they took that off the market.
Well, I guess at that time, because, you know, we didn't have the internet and information.
Sure. True.
You know?
So. Yeah, true. That's true. But we did have, you know, reporting agencies. You would have thought that in the first 6 months to a year, you know, but then again, look what happened with the whole COVID shot. You know, I've heard Dr. Peter McCullough talk about that, you know, the Pfizer and the Moderna shot were released in December of 2020, and that by March of 21, there were enough adverse signals clinically that it should have stopped, And that was even before they released the Pfizer documents that showed more than 1,200 conditions, diseases, and complications that were caused by the shots that they knew about before they released it. And yet, here we are today, doctors that are still pushing the shot. I mean, you work in a hospital system. I mean, you're around a bunch of, I mean, all of your colleagues that are conventionally trained and have been told by the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology to, you know, put a sock in it about telling people that there's a risk. What are your other colleagues? How are they responding to the irrefutable evidence that's out there now about problems associated with these shots?
I think there's still an element of willful blindness. I mean, much less than in 2021. I think, you know, there are some that are coming around the corner and realizing that not only did the shots not work, but they're causing harm. I will tell you that, well, I know the American Medical Association quoted that 96% of physicians in our country got the injections, but then you look at their cohort of surveyed people was only 1,000 people. So who knows if we can apply that percentage to the entire population of physicians. But a lot of physicians did end up getting these injections. And I, you know, they, there's a reason they injected the first responders first, because I've worked on a lot of foundations to raise money for the hospital. And the foundation people always say that the doctors need to donate money first, because then the lay people will donate money. So I'm sure they, you know, injected all the first responders first, because then the lay people would follow. And what's really disgusting in Tampa Bay, January 2021, we played for the Super Bowl title in Tampa Bay. And if you were a first responder and you got injected, you got to go to the Super Bowl for free.
Oh, wow. Wow. You know, I was listening to a video earlier this evening. You know, there was a black, that Fauci was going out to the black community and trying to coerce the black people to take this shot. And this young man just like dressed him down. And he's like, basically, we're not that stupid. And when you have to like bribe people and offer them free Super Bowl tickets, lottery tickets for 4 years in college, lottery tickets for $1 million. And then when the carrot didn't work, then we'll use the stick and say, well, if you don't get the shot, you can't travel, you can't keep your job, you can't go into a restaurant, all these things. And, you know, the whole coercion on both sides, which eliminates informed consent. I mean, it even eliminates consent, let alone informed consent,
right,
you know, like
right.
The coercion of things. Are they still maintaining those sort of rigorous things within the hospital system themselves? Like you have to be tested, or you have to wear a mask, or you have to show proof of vaccination to come into the hospital?
No. So the masks went away in September. Both in our hospital and in my office. I'm not employed by the hospital. I'm employed by a large medical OBGYN group. The masks finally went away in September. And I told my partner the other day, if the masks come back, he's going to have to find another partner, because I'm not doing it again. It's ridiculous. There's no data supporting that they do anything. There's no testing, I don't think, now, unless the patient comes in with some respiratory issues, but they just don't automatically test for COVID. And we haven't had a COVID unit. I'm chief of staff of my hospital. We haven't had a COVID unit, I mean, over a year now, plus, I'm sure. So, you know, it's a non-issue now. I mean, it's been a non-issue for a long time. I mean, we were busy in the year 2020, but we were never not able to provide a patient with a hospital bed or a ventilator.
Yeah, unfortunately, it got to the point, and I was involved in several cases around the country, you know, it's just sort of as a side chair quarterback, so to speak, that people would contact me. And it just as a physician, you know, I was, like I said, you know, I was the director of a level 2 trauma center for 12 years in a sizable community hospital before I moved to Cleveland and started my integrative practice. But it just is so perplexing to me that physicians just stopped thinking, stopped reading, stopped doing differential diagnosis. You know, I've had patients that had gone, or not even patients, but like relatives, of friends that went to the hospital with really diverse symptoms that, you know, they didn't even evaluate them appropriately for. They would go in with belly pain and would say, well, you've got COVID. Well, maybe they had appendicitis. Maybe they had diverticulitis. Maybe they had a perforated colon. Maybe they had something else going on, but it didn't matter. It was all about COVID. And I hope that someday our profession will get back to using its brain. I mean, right now it just seems like it's just algorithm-driven medicine, knee-jerk everything, and they just stopped thinking. Has your experience been like that since you are more of a hospital-based physician?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe, you know, my chief of staff, Dumb, started January of 2020, and I'm chief of staff, and I actually gave a presentation in July of 2021 regarding early outpatient treatment of COVID, because we had had a pregnant woman present to our emergency room at 26 weeks of gestation with a saddle embolus, and they had to send her to a different hospital to be placed on ECMO, and she ultimately passed away. 26 weeks, probably was in her, you know, 20s, early 30s. She had presented to the emergency room 2 weeks prior, diagnosed with COVID, but she wasn't sick enough to be admitted, so of course she was sent home on nothing. So I presented early outpatient therapy, and then I presented a slide from the Israeli Ministry of Health showing that they were now on their third injection, the booster injection, and they were seeing already that the injections were failing because they had a huge number of people hospitalized and on ventilators over in Israel. And I said, I don't think the vaccines are going to be the way out of this pandemic. I think we need to treat. Well, after I gave that talk, the administration immediately started discussing how they were thinking about making the vaccines mandatory in the hospital. And the next day, three physicians went to the CEO of the hospital demanding I not only step down as chief of staff, but be kicked off the staff of the medical staff of the hospital because I was evidently dangerous and anti-vaccine. That's all they got out of my talk.
Wow.
Incredible.
So I want to ask about ivermectin, because I think I saw on one of your slides that I know that hydroxychloroquine is okay for pregnant women. Is ivermectin safe for pregnant women?
Dr. Thorpe states that it's probably safe, but not in the first trimester when you know, the organogenesis is occurring. We know hydroxychloroquine is safe. We've had for decades women with lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, other connective tissue disorders to where they take hydroxychloroquine every day at the same dose we would give for 5 days for COVID, you know, 200 milligrams. But of course, that's dangerous. And I will tell you that I've not had one lupus patient on hydroxychloroquine that's had COVID.
Yeah, for sure. And rheumatoid patients and things like that also, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know about ivermectin, because I get that question asked quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it sort of says that you shouldn't use it, but if you're in the second or the third trimester, and the dose is small, and you don't take it forever, I think it's really important. I want to dive in a little bit more to this study that you're doing with Dr. Cole. Ryan's a friend of mine, you know, with Dr. Cole and with Dr. Thorpe. About the shedding. You know, we tend to call it not shedding, but transmission. And I define that a little bit differently, because shedding is like from the chickenpox vaccine or the shingles, chickenpox vaccine or the oral polio vaccine. If that virus sheds on you, you get chickenpox or you get polio. With COVID, it's not even a virus that's shedding. It's probably a spike protein acting as an exosome by skin-to-skin contact. So it's really, and we're stuck on that word shedding, it's never going to go away because that's what people believe that it is. But to me, it's more of a transmission. You're transmitting something that you're not getting COVID. You're getting vaginal bleeding. You're getting neurological problems. You're getting cardiac things. So anyways, that's just my own personal beef. That's my own personal thing I've been talking about for a long time. But your experience and what you are showing or attempting to demonstrate in this study is that there really is something shed or something transmitted from the vaccinated to the unvaccinated. Talk about that a little bit in your clinical experience.
Yeah, so definitely we've seen, I don't have the statistics, but Dan McDyer in Jacksonville has run some analytics and showed that the amount of postmenopausal bleeding in his practice had gone up pretty significantly after the injections started. And same in the reproductive age women, where there's just been abnormal bleeding. And the usual things we do to ameliorate the problem aren't working. And the workup is not like hormonally, everything's normal. We can't explain, there's no structural problem. You know, some of these women have ended up with a hysterectomy because we just can't, you know, do anything for the patient. They keep bleeding. But this study is going to provide tissue for Dr. Cole to then stain for the spike protein, and I think on our last call there's a possible way to stain for the lipid nanoparticles too, because I think they're working in conjunction, because like I said, we didn't see as many of these problems in 2020, and that was from the infection, so there wouldn't have been any lipid nanoparticle component at that time. But if there is spike in those tissues and that woman has not received a vaccine and she has not had COVID infection per the absence of nucleocapsid protein that will also be stained for, the only other explanation would be that she was around somebody else that had been vaccinated.
Right. Well, we'll all be looking forward to see what the results of that. So Dr. Kimberly Biss, I really want to thank you for joining me here this evening. This has been incredibly informative. And I know that our listeners will really, really appreciate you and appreciate you stepping out and for sharing all of the statistical data. Thank you for joining me here this evening. If you are in St. Petersburg area and you would like to see an OB-GYN, how can they get a hold of you? How can they call your office and make an appointment to see you?
Well, I'll just give my office number. It's 727-456-0080.
Well, that's a little fast. Do that again a little bit slower.
727-456-0080.
That's great, because, you know, women are always looking and asking around, where can I find somebody that's on the same page with me? Who will check my hormones? Who will, not force me to get vaccinated because I'm pregnant or because I, you know, all of these different things. And I think obviously by the position that you've taken and said this, that you're going to do informed decision, informed consent, and respect the patient's decision on what they want to do, and hopefully tell them enough information that they won't want to get the jab. I mean, for sure. That's in my opinion, that's what I would say. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I would say you would be open to that for sure. So I want to thank everyone for joining us here this evening. I want to close. This has been a very important evening for the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. And I will tell you that next Tuesday night, we've been talking all evening on and off about Dr. Jim Thorpe. And I know that many of you have watched his movie and you've seen a lot of the different things he's done. And he will be our guest here next week on the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. So I want to thank you again so much for joining. And I always close all of my podcasts, whether they are live, whether they're pre-recorded or live, with one of my favorite verses from the Bible, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until we see you again next week, thanks for everything. And thank you for joining us tonight. Have a good evening. And thank you again, Dr. Biss, for joining us. We have arranged for an exclusive discount so my followers can try my favorite zeolite detox spray, Pure Body Extra, for a huge discount. At drtenpenny.com, under the shop tab, you'll see a tab that says buy zeolite for metal detox. Click on that tab and it will open a page that has a large orange button at the top that says get $50 off. And when you go to that page, you get an option to sign up for the monthly auto ship. And if you do that, you will get your first bottle of zeolite spray for only $13, and that comes with free shipping. When you add that all together, that adds up to an 82% discount. If you like the product, keep the auto ship, because you will consistently get 20% off of each order, and you will continue to get free shipping. This is the best way to keep your body clean so it can simply work better. I've been using it to heal some long-standing gum problems that I've had by spraying it in my mouth on my gums every single day, and it's been just amazing. It's a tasteless spray. You use 4 sprays 3 or 4 times a day that it helps to keep your body cleaned out. I've had people ask me so many times, how long do I have to keep taking this and buying this supplement? Well, I'll tell you what, once you find a place on the planet that is is clean and you don't have to detox, then I think you can stop it. But for now, I think it's really important to get the metals out of your body. You can find arsenic in tap water. There's mercury in your mouth from fillings, lead paint in older homes. You can get cadmium from jewelry and also from cigarette smoke. There's arsenic that can be in rice and fruit juice, and you can get it in runoff in your water. If you have well water and you live out in the country, Pure Body Extra, the zeolite spray, removes all of that. So it's really important for you to use this product, and you can use it when you're pregnant, you can use it with nursing, you can use it with children of all ages, you can even use it with your pets. You can spray a little bit in their water so you can detox your animals so they have a healthier, cleaner, longer life also. So let me say that again. Go to drtenpenny.com, under the shop tab, click on the tab that says buy zeolite for metal detox, and then follow the prompts. As a first-time buyer, you'll get a first bottle for only $13. This is a special and exclusive discount just for the drtenpenny.com followers, and thank you so much in advance for participating in this special offer. And if you're going to buy supplements, we encourage you to shop at our store, which is shoptenpenny.com, or you can go directly to drtenpenny.com and go under the shop label. There's also a supplement label. We make it really easy, lots of different ways that you can find us. These supplements, our private label supplements, have white bottles with green leaves. That's how you know that those are the special ones that you get the discounts on. If you go to the checkout and use podcast at the checkout, you'll get 10% off consistently all the time. Now, you may get other things that are put into your shopping cart. If they're not private label, you won't get the 10% off, but you will still have great savings if you're using a mixture of our private label supplements and other things that are available in our store. You can also get 10% off at our apparel store by using podcast at checkout. I love our apparel. In fact, I buy stuff from my own store. I get t-shirts and sweatshirts. I wear them at the airport. I have one that says Faith Over Fear. I wear that consistently on the airplane. I always get a lot of thumbs up, because then that way you can share your faith with others and get a smile at the same time. We have totes and mugs and t-shirts and sweatshirts that are there. And we're always adding new things because we have a great designer. So be sure to go to drtenpenny.com underneath the shop button. You will be able to see our apparel store. Use podcast at the checkout for 10% off every time you shop. I want to say a word about one of our special sponsors, MyPillow.com. I know Mike Lindell personally, and I know how hard he works day in and day out to do great things for this country. He's made many, many affiliates available for his MyPillow products, and we are proud to be one of the affiliates to this company to support him and to support us. You know, there are more than 200 products available at the MyPillow.com store. So you can find something for a special person, for a special event. You can even find things for your pets at MyPillow.com. Now, we know that there are a lot of affiliates that support Mike Lindell and use this affiliate program. But if you're going to share the love a little bit, use promo code DRT. You can frequently get 60% off, and sometimes they run special deals of 70 and 80% off. So check back frequently. Try shopping first at MyPillow.com and use DRT at the promotional code at checkout.